Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
building sufficient introductions and conclusions around novel ideas. And this is something which I suppose I have had to do, as I've had what I'm being told, a whole series of unending novel ideas, one novel idea after the other. And there's sort of a process which you sort of look back and you say, oh, what's happened? I've actually done the actual little basic work and I've spent all this time working on things. Now, I suppose if you are in a shopping centre or you're working for someone else, they make absolutely damn sure that whatever you produce is worthwhile, and it's off your hands, so you're free, ready just to do that next bit of work, either, say, it might be making a sandwich or serving someone or changing a light bulb, something which is very well defined. And what will happen is that you'll learn how to do it, and as soon as you've done it, people will compliment you, sort of take away the introduction, take away the conclusion of your work, so you can repeat it ad infinitum. Now, if you're sort of a bit like iRobot, sort of a robot put out in the sheds and the badlands, and you just continuously move and repeat things over and over, just do that. I suppose you call that rehabilitation or whatever it is. So you work a little bit, and it doesn't work, you refine it, do it again. And so you just do things over and over and over and spread things up. And you work on various things, and they produce a series of, I suppose, discoveries and advancements. So the actual, if you can imagine a linear idea from the introduction, work and conclusion, you come in from the side saying, well, I have to do this for completely insane reasons. So the complete insane reason is that I have to achieve, I suppose, understanding of what I can do electronically or with electronics, constrained by cost, finance, advancement. So you can sort of hear the nighttime traffic and insects at night here as I walk up to the gym I'm going to up here in Australia. But so the general sort of motivation to get into it is that I had to learn electronics and produce something from side to side, and so you've given that, you then add other constraints. So rather than just pick the easiest kit and do something again, I sort of looked at the overall area and said, oh, well, look, I have to, if I want to do anything, I really have to produce these results and explore this area, because I know this area is not understood. So how does a combination, trying to actually, in the inky blackness, work out what was black for me, what I didn't understand, and try and differentiate that from what I was finding the rest of the world didn't understand. So a lot of the rest of the world doesn't understand or doesn't directly assess and evaluate. I think that might be the term physics theories. They either accept or reject the Big Bang. They accept or reject without knowledge Einstein and stuff like that, and they do it by who's got the Nobel Prize. They actually, the majority of things, they judge people by how they dress, how they look, what car they do. They actually don't have a lot of deep analysis. So that was seeing that sort of a double void that I was looking into, that if you're going to work in the area, you'll work in the area which would teach you your limits and thought limits. So if you couldn't get it to work, it meant that your thought was also screwed. So it meant the way that I went in and I produced 1, 2, 3 prototype areas, and they tended to just lock together. Now, as I built them, it appeared obvious that they could be stacked and built and given, sort of like, you walk to a lookout and you can see a plane and that no one else can see, and this is interactivity. As you start looking at items, you can see different items that you can buy and add into it. So you're in a new vista, a new idea. So a lot of people, I suppose, live in a very sort of dense jungle going back and forth from the village. I've sort of wandered off and gone to this lookout, have this long vision. I've come back to the little stories of this long vision. And the people in the tribe say, oh, don't listen to him, he's got a spear through his head, all this type of crap. And so there's an element of that. And so that abandonment, which lets you actually develop and work on things yourself, has meant that rather than give up and say, I demand, I insist, I need, I've just built myself. So I've worked on the podcast stuff, built the software for that, built the software for other things. And eventually, a long chore building the software to write papers, or software procedures more than anything. And in the process, exploring unusual things. So in the area that you can really only send a paper to someone once, and they might listen to it once as they're going through, and it's the overcapacity for them, and so you get a single listen from it, and you get a feedback. And so the feedback I had was that the words that I'm using, the structure that I'm using, is too visually dense, too complex for them, and so that I need to have a form of publication in which the images are animated and diagrams go ahead. And you sort of have that with software, where you have drawings, things are drawn, so your brain is watching what's drawn as it goes ahead. So that's sort of a known thing. And as you do it, you start saying, what is the problem? The thing is that I've produced this, it doesn't fit into society as we see it. Our society as we see it has said, well, I suppose it's basically say, I wouldn't say stroke patients. There's only one avenue for you, and that's in the discard, shut up and discard thing. We're throwing you into the rubbish. We also don't want you to stink and cause any more problem. So we've been good enough not to actually execute you. So the least you can do is not cause us any more problem. So when you are out there in the garbage pile putting things together, it is unlikely that you're going to build something that's going to fit into society neatly. It's just the nature of where you are. Sort of like if you have got your easel out and the bus leaves to the tourist destinations, you miss it and you have to go around, you paint other things. And so what I've done is basically painted another thing which doesn't fit in. And then not fitting in is this marathon effort. One is to actually communicate and write it. And so this process of writing text, getting the text to read back and forth over and over again. And mathematically, it what is it? There's a process here that you fix 1% and create 2% error. And so this process is an awful, awful process, because what you have expands, grows up till the logic is very clear why it's not working. Then you have to restructure and rebuild. And that a big area. So starting from the actual ideas, you build up the structure. And the sort of the first realization is the difficulty of me writing a conclusion. Because a number of things. One is that people's belief in conclusion should be easy, simple, obvious, and agree with what I'm doing. I.e., I'm living in a life in which all conclusions I have follow. Therefore, I can't have another conclusion which is outside that area. It's prescribed conclusions, and moreover, I as a teacher work from prescribed solutions, forward prescribed solutions, and train people to believe in prescribed solutions. I create the entire box and dice to make sure that the teacher is in control, authority is in control. And that, I think, is essentially what we want educated people to do, to be able to think, but act communally. It's sort of like we want them to think for themselves to the extent that they can actually fit in society and benefit. Sort of it's a strange thing. And so I began to look at these different conclusions. The conclusion functionally is a end point, a connector point into future work. And so a scientific conclusion is an area which summarizes the thought and actually provides the opening. So essentially, scientific papers connect to each other by a combination of closed-ended and open-ended. So essentially, if someone wrote a completely closed-ended science paper, it wouldn't go anywhere. There's always going to be some more research you can go, or this is the best we've gone to, and there's got to be some benefit in reading the paper. So they could just get an SMS of the results, but what they really want to know, people really want to know, is how you got there, the quality, the significance, a whole lot of other features necessary to push things on. Then there's the promulgated conclusions, there's the scientific conclusions, there's judicial conclusions. That's the sort of thing that police and the various things use. They actually let's see what this ambulance is doing here. Okay, you heard the Doppler shift there. So most of the ambulances in the universe are going away from us, bugger. Okay, so you've got judicial conclusions. That is, conclusions which resolve the information into something, a position which is judgeable, resolves the time frames in, and you wind up with a jail sentence, or a free man, or a payment. The opposite of a scientific conclusion, which is open-ended, a judicial is closed-ended. Then you've got a sort of a summary newspaper style conclusion with like a music conclusion, da 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 da, like that. Then there's the other things, bizarre things, is a moral conclusion. And one of the questions with any conclusions, can you ever actually make a physical conclusion? So you may well laugh at moral conclusions, but the overall amazing thing about moral conclusions is the idea that it has been so amazingly productive when people have said, well, what does this mean in the bigger picture? And the moral conclusion is sort of, you can laugh at the mechanism, but the idea is a scale. What does this mean in terms of bigger scale stuff? And it's been a phenomenally productive one. So people doing a moral investigation of a piece of wire and a current discover that it's a magnetic field associated with it. Someone morally thinking about numbers believed there's a certain morality in numbers and came up with binary, Leibniz. So it's not whether conclusions are so much productive, but it's what they do. And the conclusion for someone in the middle of a project is a strategic conclusion. That is, given the information we know and what we want to do and the options available, what are we going to do? That's a conclusion. So it's a sort of a process. So you've got all these different conclusions, and particularly if people aren't booked up for it, it's really difficult. If someone is prescriptive, they and Kings Row, powerful. Ronald Reagan was in Kings Row. I know that because I had an old book of his with Kings Row and him slapping a woman, as you do. If you've got a power conclusion you're going across, one of the great things is to go in, mix up, not listen to. There's a whole heap of things that if you're a bully and you don't listen to things, you can actually affect the conclusion. There's sort of like a game theory conclusion that I can actually undermine your work. So there's a social conclusion saying that we will never fund unethical work, or something like an ethical conclusion. There's a choice of not making a conclusion because a conclusion does have an influence which transfers power. So if you have a series of conclusions which suit a group in power, and they can put it on, they can start asking questions and you can start answering them, and pretty soon you've lost control because of people asking the wrong questions. I know this sounds rather difficult. So we've got all these conclusions to come along and try and work out what's going on. And so, this little Aussie set of traffic lights. Sure, I'm going to walk across anyway. It's turned red. Oops. Please don't kill me. Okay. Going well. So that was one area saying, oh, bugger. So the problem is I've got this information, and I now have, instead of a road map, I've got a road map with junctions which I have to pull back and steer. So this is going to be bloody difficult. And then the different layers of introduction. So that's the end point. You've got your work, your beginning point. Now, the introduction is basically, it's the what is it introduction. And the what is it, and how the what is it introduction, how far it leads forward to the conclusion. So there is the what is it by what is the research you're doing. What is the research in with respect to a conclusion? Slightly different introduction. So the basic introduction is what we're going to see. Then there's an introduction about sort of why we're going to see it. And then why we're going to see it is the question that's answering. So you've got these conclusions, these introductions, which are building up such that it makes sense, the pathway, it's the architecture making sense coming in. And you then, as with, there's this sort of conclusion craft where you can dominate the conclusion and steer it. That's the ultimate thing that you want to do. People are okay with conclusions, but they're not okay with being concluded. So there's this real psychological warfare on the conclusion aspect. There's a psychological warfare on the introduction process. And so as the conclusion pans out to a larger range of things, so too does the introduction pan up to a larger range of things. And the process is to understand, to warn the people that it's not a good situation. You really basically have to take the entire life story and watch the entire episode. It's not a wham-bam television advertisement. This is actually, you've got to watch the
entire series and go in your own journey of discovery, because you've been had and you've been lied to, you've been defrauded, and this is the process. And there's a lot of emotion. A lot of people are going to slam down the door saying, I have not been lied to. My life is not a lie. I have not been mad at my children for doing homework, not doing homework, because my fundamental authority is based on things I really don't understand. So it's really, really complex thing to go. So sort of the higher level of introduction is saying that the human race has made many missteps, and talk to me about misstep. Throwing you out is something that you really can't. It's something that you've got to think through. And the fact that you haven't killed yourself is saying that I do not believe myself personally a misstep, but I do believe people in general make a misstep. And if they've made a misstep, there is sort of a consequence, because we've moved from missteps to forward steps. And this is our civilization for all its faults. And so we've had a series of missteps, give it smoking, ozone layer, climate change, are missteps. And there is a process going on where initially first question is, so it's bad, and who are you blaming? So they're right back to the really primitive way of doing conclusions, the primitive way of doing introductions to work. And so there's this initial disarming of a topic, to disarm the power associated with it, have a more clinical look. So your very first phase is alerting the people of the problem and stepping back. Then you've stepped back, you've done your job, you've alerted it to them, and you're doing your job as a scientist, just putting together a quiet scientific solution which just may save the day more than actually ripping the shit out of everybody. So one of the great things about burning coal and feeding developing countries tobacco and addicting people to wealth and needless materials and stupid activities, ultimately you got to ask yourself, someone who's got 12 months to die, I've got 12 months to die, and I want to take a big flight to Paris, from Sydney to Paris, and I'm just going to, part of my death wish is to actually poison the planet and actually dump that amount of fuel on, where I could actually spend the time, rather than stuck in the plane, actually talking to people and chewing the fat and getting used to things. So the sort of the introduction is that phase one of an introduction. Phase two is the g'day. It's good, these people going in the night without lights and without helmets. So what can you say? So phase two is along that regime, and phase two has a whole lot of open-ended things, because you're a scientist and that is your trade. That's working with the open-ended things, working with this equation. If I manipulate it, it might go here, it might have this. These are all potentials and possibilities. And now with potential and possibility, you have the establishing its potential and discussing its possibilities. This is not, that doesn't sell. So people in phase one, I want to blame, and they're information consumers, which is really unfortunate, because the actual work that you're doing is not for consumption. In fact, this is one of the amazing things, is that writing things up, I eventually was able to have self-tour and actually guide my research. However, this is the way where the paper is now. I have a whole series of things. They're not ready to burst in. They're not going to achieve it. So I acknowledge I'm going away. You can go away. And but as you're leaving the room, I just quietly call after you, say, under my breath, say, "Oh, you've had a problem." What did you say? I'm saying that if you're leaving the room and haven't got a solution and you just want to blame people and wallow, you're part of the problem. And you can get very aggressive about it. You can actually try and stop me, but I don't think that's going to solve it. Then finally, when everything's together, we have a proven solution with a proven problem. So that's the way I fix the problem. I have a method of fixing it, and it can be things are known because they're proven and they're tried. There's the actual fluffy front end of phase two is there. And once again, you can write a short paper. But in this intermediate time, you have this stuff which is ballooning out. And it's ballooning out because the central concept, the central group of work isn't actually fixed yet. But it's also ballooning out because you have a myriad of conclusions. Because it's not fixed, it is ripe for political influence. That is that if you've got someone and they're just setting up their tent and they're just looking at a thing, if you can go in and kick him in the hip and push him down a slope and get their campfire and throw it in their tent and lay a poo in their billy, so you can really wreck them. You've got to move in really quickly before they're the subject. And you have to, basically, when people go up to you, say, "I'm in that danger zone. You can wreck me if you want to, but I'm moving in such a way that I've seen it. I've got a lid on my billy, and I've actually put my billy, your billy there, so when you have a crap in it." Now, this actually... a story a little bit similar to that, which I'll tell at some stage along the time. So it's in this danger zone. You basically have to say there's a danger zone and actually have an introduction which has enough exits around for it, saying, "This is what we're doing. If you don't want to, please... you're welcome to continue not solving your problem. You're welcome to continue on with either you can say it's an insoluble problem, I don't see it as a problem, whatever, but you're not going to contribute in a meaningful, positive way," and have enough of that introduction available in such a way that it doesn't completely obscure the people with sort of an aggressive thing out like that. And then the conclusion is... again, if someone hasn't really read and understood enough, they really have to look up for their conclusion. Now, this is really fascinating in that I've, in terms of looking at experiments, seen sort of the experimental hypothesis induction level, and looked at how actually scientists operate, and expanded it and generalized it and sort of softened it to expand it. And then this isn't taught, but it's also the idea of human endeavor, which is really rather interesting. If you actually look at what people are doing, there's people can work on a very small scale, but it can't expand. And it's people like work on a very large scale, sort of like invading a country, vaccinating country, laying down a world, you know, laying down roadways, but it can't shrink down. And this is one of these very curious things in terms of that the ability for this transmission from the large area to the microscopic in a positive way, whereas both large and small
people get sort of schooled in a sort of a negative approach to it. And this negative approach overall, large scale, small scale, negative approach, means that people don't really think about conclusions, don't really think about introductions and going through. Now, I've actually spoken, I hope, well, and I hope that I've held the microphone away so it's not doing a clacking sound, and I hope that I've actually spoken with a bit of diction and intent to come across as I'm coming up to my anytime fitness. And this is probably just another example of you're on the scrap heap, you've been abandoned, but you've got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and push yourself forward. It's sort of like, reminds me of infantry units which have been left behind for a while. It's like only a couple of hours, but they haven't gone to pieces. They've picked themselves up, and they're carrying on forward. So in the cognitive training, I've just got to keep it sensible. So there's the physical cognitive aspect, and then there's this sort of intellectual rehabilitation. And it's this thing about where it's sort of like going into a lab with your equipment on the shelves, and you've actually got to wire it up. So I've wired up a gym and a cognitive training computer. I've wired up their little meager soldering irons and equipment and computers and software. So hopefully I'll get there eventually. Thanks a lot for listening as I get to Anytime Fitness Blaxland. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.